Let's get it on!
Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey. So glad you could join me. I am your host, Monty Colvin.
And he knows everything. Just ask him.
Sorry it's been a while since the last episode, but like usual, I've been busy. And here lately, I've been writing a lot of new songs. And I've really been enjoying it again. And it's kind of funny, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I just kind of stopped writing. I was in a new relationship, and I was kind of involved with that. And all my recording equipment was kind of outdated, and so I was just a little bit burned out on the whole music thing in general. I mean, I'd been writing literally every day since I was about 17 or 18 years old, and it was just a constant obsession of coming up with new ideas, new melodies, writing stuff down, and I never had writer's block. I was just always churning out the stuff. But after I spent 4 years making my last crunchy album, Loserville, I just said, you know, I'm going to take a little hiatus. And so I started doing the podcast, and I threw myself into my artwork a little more, and I just didn't worry about writing songs at all. But a few months ago, I went over and picked up the guitar and started messing with it, and the next thing you know, I had about 5 or 6 new songs in the works. And suddenly it was fun again, and it was like I had never stopped writing at all. It just all came right back.
That is bad news.
And so I've been recording some demos here at my house, and some of it sounding kind of galactic, if you know what I mean. But we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I cannot wait.
I also wanted to tell you about the Kansas City Royals World Series Parade.
Oh, pinch me.
I know a lot of you probably don't care anything about that, but then again, who doesn't love a parade? I remember how excited I was to go to those when I was a kid, even though it usually just ended up being a bunch of Shriners riding around on mini bikes.
Awesome.
So a few weeks ago, when the Royals won the World Championship, they announced that they were going to have a parade here in Kansas City, and I was like, yeah, we ought to go to that. And the day before it happened, all the schools announced that they were going to let the kids out for the whole day, just so they could go. And most of the businesses in town were shutting down, and so everybody was planning to go. And I started hearing things like, yeah, there may be about 300,000 people at this parade. And so you may want to take a bus ride down there. And so Lindsay takes off work and we get the kids and we start leaving around 10:30. And I'm like, well, it starts at noon. This is actually kind of bad. We probably should have left a lot earlier. And sure enough, we go down to catch a bus, and you can't even get a parking spot to get on the bus. And I turn to Lindsay, and I say, well, what do you want to do? You want to just go back home? And she says, no, let's go. Let's just drive down there. And I'm like, no way. This is insane. We're going to be stuck in traffic for hours. It's going to be a nightmare. And she's like, I don't care. Let's go. And so I said, okay, against my better judgment, here we go. And we went downtown, and we sat in traffic for about an hour and a half. And there weren't any parking spots within miles. But I did end up finding a spot about 2.5 miles away. And we just left the car on a side street and took it on foot. And when we finally made it down there, we were in time for the parade, but it was just a massive sea of people. And as it turns out, there were about 800,000 people in downtown Kansas City. And you basically just got wherever you could get, and there's where you were stuck. And I was fortunate enough that I did catch a glimpse of a few of the players, and so I did kind of feel like I was there and a part of it. And after it was done, we walked 2.5 hours back to the car and then drove out of there.
This story is amazing.
Now, was it fun? Not really. But am I glad I went? Definitely. Because years from now, when I see pictures of it or video of that day, I can say we were there. And I really have only my wife, Lindsay, to thank for that, because without her insisting that we do it, I would have just gone home and watched it on TV.
Right. Dumb and lazy. We get it.
As far as the kids, well, they just had a miserable time. They couldn't see anything because they're too short, and one of them even threw up.
That's fantastic.
But that's kids for you, because it doesn't matter what the occasion is, they would rather be at home on their PlayStations.
Shh, duh.
Speaking of which, the other day I walk in the living room and see the boy playing a game called Mortal Kombat. And these two characters are fighting each other, and one reaches over to the other guy and rips his leg off and then starts beating him with this severed leg. And I turn to the 8-year-old and I say, "Geez, dude, this is gruesome." And he says, "Yeah, it's awesome."
Totally.
And I keep watching and I see all the characters have some special power or weapon. Like this one guy has these big razor sharp hatchets instead of hands. And he's just cutting people in half. And I see his next opponent is this hot female chick with big boobs. And I'm thinking, yeah, I bet I know what her special power is. And so I ask the boy, what's her special weapon? And he looks at me and says, she yells really loud. And I said, oh, she nags her opponent to death, huh?
I don't find that funny.
And, well, he had no idea what I was talking about. And he just went back to playing the game, and this big guy with the razor blades for hands just starts beating the hell out of this chick. And I'm just thinking, you know, that's not right. I'm guessing that hardcore feminists do not approve of Mortal Kombat.
That pisses me off.
But all that to say, you can't keep the kids off the electronic devices. That's all they want to do. And the more we disapprove of it and tell them that it's lame, the more they want to do it. But I don't think it's just my kids. I think it's all kids in general are just belligerent and rebellious in nature. Because I remember when I was a kid, my parents wanted me to listen to gospel music, and I was like, no, I want to listen to metal. And they refused to let me listen to any rock and roll whatsoever. And so when I had a kid, I went, all right, you can listen to any kind of metal you want. Here, take some Metallica, try this out. And my daughter went, no, I like opera. But it's not just music. If you tell your teenage daughter that it's 90 degrees outside and to dress appropriately, she'll say, I'm wearing my winter jacket and some snow boots. But then when she's heading off to school and it's 20 degrees outside and you say, dress appropriately, you might want to wear a jacket, she'll say, are you kidding me? A jacket? Where's my shorts?
Screw you!
But don't get me wrong, we love them, and I'm not trying to be too tough on them. They're all just a bunch of belligerent a-holes, that's all. Hey, what's going on? Wait a minute, could it be?
Zoe's CD Review!
Yes, it's my daughter Zoe London Colvin with a CD review. Hey, Zoe.
Hey, Dad.
You know, it's kind of funny, but I was just talking about you and the kids.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was just saying how wonderful and rewarding it is to have children.
Well, yeah.
So, what have you been doing here lately?
Well, I don't mean to brag, but I did spend my tax refund on Futurama, the complete series, on DVD.
Your tax refund?
Well, yes, I have been known to have money withheld from my paychecks.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You were in some plays that you got paid for.
Yes. Acting.
Well, yes. Okay, well, what do you got for us?
Today, I'll be reviewing They Bleed Red, the new CD from Devil You Know.
Ah, Devil You Know. A little metalcore for us, huh?
What's metalcore?
Oh, well, it's where they scream a lot and then sing on the chorus.
Oh, okay.
Ever-changing, ever-evolving.
Red is the second album from Devil You Know, which everyone knows is fronted by former Killswitch Engage vocalist Howard Jones.
Yeah, I loved Howard when he was in Killswitch Engage. He was so great on those classic tunes like End of Heartache and Rose of Sharon. I mean, wouldn't you agree, Zoe?
Yeah, sure, I guess.
Right, okay, continue.
I was interested to see what they would do with this sophomore effort, and I came away with mixed reactions.
Oh, yeah?
While there are moments of instrumental brilliance that, in my opinion, surpass their first CD, their insistence on maintaining their formulated style keeps them from attaining the melodic excellence their music has the potential for.
Oh, I see. So I think what you're saying is you think Howard should scream less and sing more.
Howard?
Howard Jones. He used to be in Killswitch Engage.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we know that we don't belong. Where did we take a turn so wrong? I've
waited all on the altar. I stumble, but never falter.
This CD is good, but not great. However, if you're in the mood to have your head kicked in, there are a few songs I liked.
Oh, really? Okay, which songs did you like?
I'm gonna have to get back to you on that.
Ah, come on, just give me the title of one song. Just one.
Jeez, Dad, quit interrogating me.
Well, Zoe, I just wanted one.
Jeez, Dad, I don't know.
All right, I'm sorry, my bad.
Okay,
can we calm down and do the end of the segment?
Okay.
All right. Well, Zoe, what do you give this CD on a scale of 1 to 5 bloody metal skulls?
I'll give it 3 out of 5. Bloody metal? What was it?
Skulls. Bloody metal skulls.
Oh, right. Bloody metal skulls!
Well, Zoe, I cannot argue with that. You definitely know what you're talking about, and thanks for that epic review.
Bye, everybody.
Well, here's one more song from Devil You Know. It's a bonus track, it's a cover tune, and I think it's a song you'll recognize.
Against it, now I'm back on my feet.
That's a pretty good cover tune of a song by Survivor. And these days, I like the TV show Survivor much better than the band Survivor. Especially after I heard that they demanded that Mike Huckabee and Kim Davis stop using that song at their political rallies. I mean, personally, I don't care which way you lean politically. If you want to use one of my songs and give me a bunch of exposure, you go right ahead. I hate Hillary Clinton, but if she wants to use a crunchy or Galactic Cowboy song to promote her campaign, I say thanks for the royalties. But based on how many times I've had to hear Eye of the Tiger over the last 35 years, I'm guessing Survivor's got enough money. They can afford to be snarky and tell people not to play their songs. I just wish everyone would decide to stop playing Eye of the Tiger.
You did.
And I guess I'm not the only one who has a list of songs that they're sick of. The other day I got an email from Scott Gibson who sent me his top 10 list of songs that he never needs to hear again. He said he used to work in a record store where he was forced to listen to some of this crap over and over, and it finally drove him to hate it. And one such song would be at number 10, it's Diamonds in the Sky by Rihanna.
No.
Yes.
No.
Scott says, how many times can you say Diamonds in the Sky in one song? There must have been some kind of wager involved here.
Uh-oh.
At number 9, it's Macarena by Los Del Rio. And yeah, I never knew what they were saying in that song. It was like, Macarena, Macarena, Macarena.
You're a racist.
Number 8 is Anything by the Artist 112. And I'll have to admit, Scott, that I had to look this one up. I had never heard of 112. And apparently there's some black guys or something that have a group, I don't know. So I'll just move on to number 7, which is Baby One More Time by Britney Spears. And yeah, I remember when that video came out, she was in a schoolgirl outfit, and she was only 16, so you had to feel guilty about thinking she was hot. But you thought, oh well, she'll disappear in a year or so. But the next thing you know, she's on the MTV Awards show carrying around a snake. And I thought, big deal, it's a snake. But apparently that and kissing Madonna made her into some kind of icon. And now here she is in her 30s, still tormenting us with her horrible music.
She's just great.
Number 6 on Scott's list is Everybody from the Backstreet Boys.
Don't do that again!
Backstreet's back, all right!
Stop it!
And Scott thinks that they should be called the Backdoor Boys, and he says, where did they go in the first place to come back from?
That is a brilliant question.
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Scott, but I do know that one of the Backstreet Boys has been on Dancing with the Stars this season, and I gotta say, he doesn't seem like a complete tool. I think the last 10 or 15 years have knocked some of the douche out of him. But I do agree, back in the day when they were huge, it was hard to take. And I agree with your statement, they had loads of suckage.
A lot.
But moving on to number 5, it's Wannabe by the Spice Girls. And Scott says, little known fact, Slutty Spice, Chubby Spice, and Mentally Handicapped Spice were dropped from the group prior to them hitting it big. Oh, well, that's very interesting, Scott. But, you see, I thought they were all known as Slutty Spice. In fact, that's the only reason why I liked them. Moving on to number 4, we have Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory. And oh my god, yes, I still hate that song.
It makes me want to throw up.
Another song that Scott never wants to hear again is at number 3, it's I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys.
Again?
Yes, the Backstreet Boys making their second appearance on Scott's Top 10. And Scott says, exactly what way are they talking about here?
I would hope most of you would know the answer.
At number two, it's What's Going On by Four Non-Blondes. And Scott kind of sounds like Jerry Seinfeld here when he says, "Is that a dude? Is that a chick? Whatever it is, it sucks rocks. Just when you think the song is over and you pray to Jesus that it is, it goes on for another 3 minutes." I mean, what's the deal with this song? Yeah, dude, I gotta agree with you on that. I hated that song then, I hate it now. I will always hate that song. But that would bring us to the number one song on Scott's list that he never needs to hear again, and it is You Had a Bad Day by Daniel Powder.
Who the hell is that? I don't even know.
Yeah, I couldn't have told you who did that song, but yeah, I got sick of that real fast. And Scott says, he sounds way too happy to have just had a bad day. What, did he get some of his $7 latte on his polo shirt? Well, good job, Scott. That is a list that may show its ugly head again come March in the top 10 playoffs.
Playoffs?
And since the top 10 playoffs are rapidly approaching, I better do another one right now.
Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
And this one comes to us from my good friend in France, Fabrice. And of course, everyone by now is aware of the tragedy that went down in Paris. And Fabrice was the first person I thought of when it happened, but he assures me he's okay, even though it was really close to where he lives. And I was really happy and relieved to hear that, Fabrice, and our thoughts go out to you. And in your honor, I will read the top 10 list that you sent me a few weeks ago, which is Fabrice's favorite songs that he's been listening to this year. And in no particular order, it's Led Zeppelin with For Your Life, somebody called The Pineapple Thief, Alone at Sea, Iron Maiden, Speed of Light, Third Degree, Circuit Court, somebody called Tim Bowness, I think it is, Press Reset, yet another band I have never heard of called Tin Spirits, T-I-N Spirits, Summer Now, UFO with Rollin' Rollin', Sanguine Hum, Out of Mind, Black Star Riders, Through the Motions, and finally, one of my favorite musicians of all time, Ginger Wildheart, with Only Henry Rollins Can Save Us Now.
At the YMCA, I'm an old dab hound. You can stick me in the desert, I'll learn to eat sand. I've been down here before, on the floor more times than Tracy Lords. I've been treading the boards, taking the blows while you were striking a pose, finding me feet while you were filling your nose. Nothing in the world will stop this show. Nothing in the world will stop this show. Even death might just see my legacy grow. But first, there's one thing I wanna know.
Well, excellent job, Fab. That was a great eclectic list of obscure stuff, and I salute you. And what a genius song from that genius Ginger Wildheart. Fabrice always keeps me stocked up on Ginger's merchandise and CDs and DVDs and all things Wildhearts. And I really appreciate it, and I think I'll play a little more Ginger.
Rollins, I said, could I have some advice? I got this thing I've been working on. It's kind of a problem, kind of a song. It's in demo form, but can I send it to you? It's called What Would Henry Rollins Do? I'd be honored to have you appear on the track. Within 1 hour, Hank came back, and this he wrote.
quote unquote. I don't want to be in this thing at all. I don't want to be in this thing at all. I don't want to be in this thing at all. I don't want to be in this thing at all. Now I know what I do with you. Now I know what Henry Rollins would do. I won't do anything I'm gonna regret. What I'll do next, I'll tell you, kid, is the same as
thanks, Henry.
Time now for your emails, questions, comments, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to start with a question that a couple of different people asked me this week. And that is, Monty, what are your religious or spiritual beliefs, or are you still a Christian? And I understand why people would ask me that, because back in the 80s, I played in a Christian band, and I wrote a lot of songs about God on all the Galactic albums, and I never really kept it a secret that I had been raised by Christian parents, and I was a Christian. But I've tried to be really honest on this show, and I've talked about it before, but I'll do it again for some of the newer listeners.
Go ahead, why don't you do that? You're going to get ostracized.
But the deal is that I was, quote, saved when I was 7 years old in the Baptist church. And I don't even know if I knew what I was doing back then, but I did know that my parents believed in Jesus and the Bible, and they told me everything in it is true, and you better believe it or you're going to hell. And from then on, I tried to believe it too, and I tried my best to live as a Christian up until in my 40s. And for the majority of those years, I was completely miserable. I constantly felt like a piece of crap, I hated myself, and I felt like God hated me. And I gave credit to God for every good thing that ever happened to me, but I also blamed Him for everything bad that ever happened to me. And I ended up kind of hating God too. And so it was just a lot of years of misery and fear. And over the years, I tried every kind of different church. I went through every kind of ritual and whatever in the Christian church, and I saw it all. And the whole time, more than anything, I was just really afraid to question any of it. But then a couple of key things happened. One day I was sitting in church and I was looking around and I just said, you know, this is just such a show. I've heard the same sermons and the Christians speak forever, over and over, and it's just left me nothing but frustrated. And I walked out of there that day and never went back.
We could just stop right there.
The other thing that happened was that when I moved to Kansas City, I met this Christian guy, and I thought we became best buds. And we were always hanging out, and I was even going to have him play in my band. But then I found out he was talking crap behind my back. He was lying about me on the internet, trying to make everybody believe I was a horrible person. And then he ended up suing me. And he completely judged me without ever coming and talking to me about it or anything. And I just went, you know, if that's what being a Christian is, I don't think I want to call myself one anymore. And I know what you're thinking, but no, I'm not basing all my beliefs now on what other Christians have done or do. I know no matter where you go, there's always going to be hypocrites and phonies. But I was really sick of being a phony myself. And I was tired of trying to make everybody believe that I was this perfect little Christian. And so I decided that what I was going to do is, first of all, research the origins of Christianity. And I didn't like what I found. And I also decided that I was going to quit blaming God for everything that happened in my life. I was going to quit living by, quote, faith all the time and just start making decisions with my brain. And then basically just take responsibility for it myself. But the biggest thing I decided to do was just stop living in fear. And I stopped thinking about the afterlife and heaven and hell and all that and just started living. And when I did that, eventually I stopped hating myself and I stopped hating God. And I know a lot of you Christian people out there right now are probably thinking, oh, that's such a shame. He's backslidden. I feel sorry for him.
You're of the devil.
But the deal is that I've actually never been happier.
God should send you to hell.
I didn't turn into a Satanist. I'm not a decadent maniac.
You are evil.
And above all, I'm not an atheist. I still believe kind of that there is probably a God that created everything. Bottom line is, I don't know. And maybe it's just force of habit, but I still find myself talking to God. But if I do pray, it's usually something like, God, if you're out there, I just hope you'll watch over us. And I just hope you'll understand that I've always been just a stupid human.
That's right.
But anyway, I hope you understand. I've got many more thoughts on the subject, but right now I got to move on to some more emails.
Thank God.
And I got one recently from Chris Archer in Canada. And he was wondering if Galactic Cowboys ever played in Canada, and he was wondering why more bands don't come to Canada on their tours. And the answer is, yeah, we did, Chris. I know we played in Toronto and Vancouver and Edmonton, but it was always such a hassle going over the border. We'd be on the bus trying to cross in the middle of the night, and the police would come on and clear the bus out and then trash the place. And I guess they were looking for drugs or guns or something. But you'd think if they couldn't find anything, they'd just go ahead and let us go, but they wouldn't. And they just hold us there like we were criminals or something. And one day we sat there for about 6 hours. And we still had hours to go before we got to the club, and they finally let us go, and the bus driver hauled ass, and we got to the club. And the roadies literally took our equipment, threw it on stage, plugged it in, and we just started playing. We got no sleep, and we just barely made it in time to play, and maybe that's why more bands don't come to Canada.
That's not it.
However, Chris said there has been a few artists who have made it up there, and he really likes guitar players like Doyle Bramhall II and Rich Robinson. Well, all right, Chris, since you like the blues guitarists, I've got something for you. It's a new solo album from Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. It's called Perfectamundo.
Oh, squeeze a real joint. Gotta make her feel good now. Tell her that you love her like you know. Practice my method just as hard as you can. You're gonna get a reputation as a loving man, and you'll be glad every night that you treat her right.
Hey, hey, hey. Okay, so I love Billy Gibbons and I love ZZ Top. But this is a little different. Do not go into this expecting Tush or Just Got Paid. To me, this sounds like Billy's been sitting around his house, screwing around with a drum machine, and just doing whatever he wanted. And that's fine. It's a solo album, and you get some really nice guitar solos from him. But you also get a rapper once in a while, and Billy occasionally singing in Spanish.
Hombre sin nombre. ¿Dónde está el corazón? Hombre sin nombre. Solía ser perfección. La culpa es de la chica.
So that's Billy Gibbons' new CD.
Uh-huh.
But here's something a lot of you might like. It's the new one from Jeff Lynne's ELO. And the name of the CD is Alone in the Universe.
When I was a boy, I had a dream. All about the things I'd like to be. Soon as I was in my bed, music played inside my head. When I was a boy, I had a dream. When I was a boy, I learned to play. Far into the night and drift away. Don't wanna work on the milk or the bread. Just wanna play my guitar instead. When I was a boy, I had a dream. And radio waves kept me company in those beautiful days when there was no money. When I was a boy, I had a dream.
You may have already heard that tune, but wow, what a great song. And I saw him do that on Jimmy Fallon the other night. And there's probably no one left from the original ELO band, but the band he has now is amazing. And this new CD is pretty good too. There's a few tunes that are a little traveling Wilbury-ish for me, but the production is incredible. If you listen to it under headphones, everything is so crystal clear, and his voice is just right in your face. But I've always thought Jeff Lynne was a genius, and for one main reason. And that is, he basically took what the Beatles did and made a career out of it for himself. But instead of the Beatles going, this guy sucks, he stole our sound, they went, no, he's awesome, in fact, I may want to do an album with him. So those are a couple of CDs you might want to check out, but let's move on to some more emails. And here's one from my buddy Matt in St. Louis.
This guy's terrific!
Matt's a great guy, and he's a drummer, and he actually came to my house a few months ago, and we jammed.
Guy's a weirdo!
And Matt wanted me to talk a little bit about the drummer who replaced Alan on the At the End of the Day tour. And he says, I got the impression that he was arrogant and cocky. How did you guys end up bringing him on that tour? Well, here's how that went down, Matt. We had this full-on U.S. tour booked, and about a week before we were supposed to leave, I got a call from Alan, and he said, I'm not going to be able to go. I'm going to have to resign from the band. And I understood because Alan had some stuff going on at home that he needed to take care of, and I said, okay, man, that's cool. But at the same time, we had obligations to Metal Blade, and a lot of people had already bought their tickets and were looking forward to it. And so I talked to the other guys, and we decided that we'd go ahead and look for a new drummer in the next week and just go for it. And so I flew to Houston, and we started auditioning a few guys. And within a couple of days, we found this guy who lived in Austin. And he was a good drummer, but we didn't really have time to get to know him or anything. It was just the kind of deal where, all right, pack your bags, we're going. And I hadn't played with anybody except Alan in the previous 10 years or so, and it was a bit of an adjustment. But he was a really good drummer, and he brought a lot of energy to the live set, and he was a pretty decent guy while we were on the road. The problem was, as soon as we got off the road, he kind of started badgering us. And he was always emailing me and calling, wanting to do more shows. And I was like, no, man, we're taking some time off. My daughter Zoe was about to be born, and we just weren't ready to go out and do more shows. And I was like, dude, just go find another gig, and when we're ready to go out again, we'll give you a call. But instead, he just got more obnoxious and threatening, and we finally went, you know, man, you're not even in the band. We may have hired you to do that tour, but your services are no longer needed. And that was the last I ever dealt with him, and it's too bad because I was going to have him play on my Crunchy album, the first one. And I'm sure we would have hired him to do another tour, but as it was, we just didn't need the drama.
You're mean.
I also got a question from Chris in Baltimore who said, hey, Monty, do you use sound bites from Laura Ingraham and Mark Levin?
What?
Well, Chris, I'm not really sure what you mean by sound bites.
The hell's wrong with this guy?
But I do listen to Mark Levin's radio show quite a bit.
He's a whack job.
I also listen to his podcast, and I like a lot of what he has to say.
What are you, right-wing kook?
As far as Laura Ingraham, well, I used to listen to her, but I don't much anymore.
I don't understand that.
She's okay, but I just like people who are a little more hardcore.
Oh, come on.
Next, I got a few questions from Todd in Wisconsin. And Todd says he loves Galactic Cowboys, and his 5-year-old son loves our album Let It Go.
Let It Go?
And Todd's first question is, hey, Monty, was there any 12-string bass on the Let It Go CD?
The answer is no!
You know, I'm pretty sure I didn't, Todd, but I believe I used some 8-string on there somewhere. But by our last couple albums, I was mainly just using my Zahn 4-string.
This is an enormous piece of information.
Todd also wanted to know what amps I use and if we tune down. Well, I'm not a big tech head, so I'm not going to tell you a bunch of model numbers and try to sound really smart. But I can tell you that I buy amp, so I've got 2 different amp setups. And for the low end, I use Ampeg and have for years. And for the high-end, growling, distorted sound, I always use some kind of guitar head. In the past, I've used Marshalls and Boogies, and presently I'm using a Line 6 combo amp. And as far as effects, I don't use a lot of them. I mean, I've messed with some distortion pedals, I've tried a Tube Screamer, and I've also used one of those little MXR compression pedals. But I found the more pedals you have, the more problems you have, so I've tried to strip it way down. As far as the tunings go, yeah, most of the stuff I've written since the first album was always in drop D or drop C. There were some songs on Space in Your Face, like Make Me Smile, that were in standard tuning, but most of my stuff since then has been dropped. To me, it just sounds heavier that way, and so why not?
That's refreshing.
Now, one of my favorite listeners, Greg Skipton in Texas, also had a question about Galactic Cowboys. And he said, hey, Monty, are there any GC songs that you still enjoy playing and some not so much? And you know, Greg, when we did that last reunion show, I found that I still love playing those hard rockers like Stress and If I Were a Killer. As you know, I love to jump around and move, and those are perfect songs for that.
He's a lunatic.
As far as songs I don't like playing, how about Someone for Everyone? That seems a little sappy to me now. And also Evil Twin. I like the song, but it's never been that fun to play live. But thanks for the question, Greg. And now that leaves us time for one more question that comes from Josh Bosley. And Josh says, hey, Monty, what's going on, buddy? Wow, well, good question, Josh. What is going on?
The answer is nothing.
I mean, I told you I was writing some songs. I watch a little NFL football on Sundays. And what else? Oh, I know. The other night, I had a really strange dream.
Wow, great. Who cares?
And the deal is, with my dreams, I don't remember a lot of them, but the ones I do remember are always extremely disappointing. And they almost always involve me being on a stage or playing a show. And in the past, I've had dreams where I'm up there playing for thousands of people, and I suddenly realize, oh no, I don't have any strings on my bass. Or for some reason, I'm playing with Guns N' Roses and go, I don't know their songs.
That's a problem.
So it's usually that kind of thing where I'm frustrated or freaking out, and the other night was no exception. I dreamed I was playing a show with Galactic Cowboys, and we were in this big club, and it was packed out. The problem was is that the crowd was just not reacting at all. They were just standing there like they were bored. And yes, I've experienced that many times playing with Galactic Cowboys, but this is a dream. And in the dream, I kept going up to the front of the stage, and I was trying to work the crowd, and I'm like, come on, let's go. But they're just standing there completely unimpressed. So I just keep playing, and all of a sudden, I look over to the side of the stage, and who comes walking on but Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam.
No way.
Yeah, and Eddie Vedder's got a microphone, and he starts singing lead vocals. And I'm going, wow, well, this is cool. I've never played with Eddie Vedder before. And in fact, I've never met him. But he's just standing there singing away. And so at that point, I run up to the front of the stage and I look out and there's like nobody there now. And yes, this has happened to me in real life, but I'm talking about the dream right now. And in the dream, everybody for some reason just left. And we end the song, and I think, well, I'm going to run over to Eddie Vedder and say something to him. But he's walking off the stage, and he is pissed. And who can blame him? He's Eddie Vedder. And he's not used to this kind of thing happening, like I am. And he just looks at me like, screw you, man. And I just stood there and thought, man, what happened? The crowd hated us. And we pissed off Eddie Vedder.
Could it get any worse?
And it was then that I woke up and realized that it was just another one of my disappointing, strange dreams. All right, you know I'm a big hard rock and metal guy, and that's mainly the stuff that I talk about on this show. But I also like to keep up with what's going on out there in the rest of the popular music world. And that's why every year about this time, I will sit down and watch the American Music Awards. And it's not because I like it. It's mainly curiosity just to see who has been successful in the music industry, because I know it's not me.
That's correct.
And after I watch the show, I always give you a recap of what happened. And I tell you who won some of the awards and who performed. And a lot of you thank me for doing this because I spare you from having to watch it yourself. However, the problem is, in the past, I've been a little bit negative.
No!
Yeah, I know, hard to believe. But it's true, I've been a little bit critical of some of the performers and artists who win on this show. But this year, I'm going to try and do something new, and I'm just going to try and be positive. Sometimes it's just a matter of personal taste. We don't have to all like the same kind of music. And just because your music is popular, it doesn't necessarily mean that you suck. So with that in mind, here we go with a positive recap of the American Music Awards. And the whole thing started out with a big production number by Jennifer Lopez. And it was mainly her dancing around, kind of like Beyonce, with a big orgy of dancers. And she didn't really sing much, but she did have a great big huge ass. And if you're into that kind of thing, I'm sure it was awesome.
I love that.
Next, you got a performance by boy band 5 Seconds of Summer. And they did a song that had the same melody as Hungry Like the Wolf. In fact, at first, I thought they were doing a cover tune. But no, it was theirs. But the good thing is that they're really popular with the kids, and the 12 to 14-year-old girls who like their music have probably never heard of Duran Duran.
Ah!
Yeah, so you see, it's okay if they plagiarize. It's all right.
Oh, okay.
All right, I like the way this is feeling. Let's continue on. And next, we got a performance from Selena Gomez. And she did the usual thing where she had a bunch of backup dancers. And even though, you know, her voice is not incredible, and I didn't really like the song, I will say she is not hard to look at. She is rather easy on the eyes, and the kids love her. Because, you know, she used to be on the Disney Channel, as were most of the participants of this show. I mean, you had people like Demi Lovato, Nick Jonas, Ariana Grande, and the kids who used to watch them on those shows are apparently now buying their albums. And of course, another group that the kids love is One Direction, who won Best Pop Group. And hey, I really don't get it, but if you can fill up an arena or stadium full of screaming adolescent girls, I say more power to you.
They're brilliant.
Next, we got a performance from Coldplay, and yeah, they're a good band. I actually don't hate Coldplay, and during their performance, they had a bunch of dancers dressed in gorilla outfits, and who doesn't like that?
I love it. I love it.
Next, there was a duet with Meghan Trainor, who did that song All About That Bass. And she sang a song with this young guy named Charlie Puth or Puth or something like that. I'd never heard of him, but he looked like he ought to be in a boy band or something. And they did this song that was real poppy, and there was a bunch of dancers out there. And after it was over, they just started making out right there on the stage. And it caught me off guard, and I did think it was a little bit strange. But then I thought, well, at least she's not making out with Madonna or Britney Spears. It's nice to see a little heterosexuality on TV for a change, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that was good.
It was a joy to watch.
And next up, we got a performance from Ariana Grande, who is, you know, very attractive. And the kids love her. And, you know, I can't do this anymore. I've tried to be positive, but, you know, that's it. I can't stand Ariana Grande. I hate her. She may be hot, but her voice grates on me like nails on a chalkboard. And the next thing you know, she's getting up there and winning the award for Best Pop Rock Female, which, by the way, previous winners include Paula Abdul, which ought to tell you the amount of talent you need to win an award on this show.
Almost none!
And then you got Nicki Minaj winning for Best Hip Hop. And why does she always look pissed off? I mean, what do you have to be pissed off about, Nicki? You're hugely popular, even though your music sucks and you have a big, giant, deformed ass.
It's absolutely huge!
And of course, like usual, there was no rock or metal on this show whatsoever. But you did get One Direction with their stupid haircuts winning Artist of the Year.
This can't be real.
And yeah, I know the kids love them. But let me tell you something. If your kids are listening to One Direction, you might want to check out the lyrics. Because according to One Direction, if your daughter likes rendezvous in hotel rooms, then she's perfect for them.
What?
Yeah, the little douchebags from England suddenly aren't so cute and innocent, are they?
My God, they're on drugs!
But to wrap things up, the big finale of the night was a performance by Justin Bieber. And that pretty much says it all. Once again, I could not contain my disgust for this display of mediocrity and lameness. And unfortunately, it's 3 hours of my life that I'll never get back. But out of the goodness of my heart, I watched the American Music Awards, so you didn't have to.
Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. And that is going to do it, my friends, for another episode of the Rockcast. Thanks so much for listening, and if you want to get a hold of me, you can do so on Facebook or at my website, montycalvin.net. And while you're there, make sure to check out my CDs and paintings and pick yourself up a Rockcast t-shirt.
We're not doing this.
I'm going to play you one last song by a band called Get Scared. It's from their CD that's called Demons, and the name of this song is R.I.P., and this is one of the best songs I've heard this year. We'll see where it lands on my top 10 of the year, but so far it's right around the top.
It's just a special kind of evil.
I'll be back soon with more fun and mayhem, but until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And
rock on. This has been Monty's Rockcast.
The end.